myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
So there you go, Down continued the record of never losing an All-Ireland final, Conan. So this was number four, and they would obviously go on and do number five in a row of never losing an All-Ireland final in 94. But this was a drought. This was a huge drought in that Down hadn't won an All-Ireland since 1968, but no county from Ulster or Connacht had won one since 1968, which was a huge way to go. It was a Leinster and Munster domination, and Down broke it.
Yeah, and I think this is really... this is probably, you always ask me why the Ulster teams stick together and stuff. This is probably it. Like, yeah, what was it, 20 odd years of going down and never winning anything and getting hammered when you go down south of the border. But Down went down and showed everybody that he could do it. And I remember the next year, Derry beat Down in Cation Park in the Ulster semi-final. Not to turn this into a Derry thing, but because Down had won the All-Ireland the year before, everybody in Derry were chanting, "We won, Sam." And it's just sort of Down doing it the year before showed everybody that it was possible now. And then Obviously Donegal went and did it, then Derry went and did it, then Down did it again. Tyrone got the final the year after it.
It was unbelievable. The scenes on the Hill 16, like everyone in Hill 16 must have had a flag. It was just, I've said this on other shows, we need to bring flags back into big matches in Croke Park. We're missing them.
Yeah, it was like a sea of blood or something, wasn't it? Like, it was just so thick red. And like, do you remember the picture of Conor Harris's dad as well on top of the Nally stand, where he was on top of the Nally stand for most of the game, just watching the match with his flag, waving that in a tricolour.
Yeah, somebody replied back to me on Twitter and says it was his father, but somebody else asked for confirmation of that. Maybe it has been confirmed since.
It has. I remember reading an article, it was 2 years ago when Conor Harrison was flying, and they were chatting. There was his dad called Liam, and they were asking him about it. Like, how did he get up there? And Conor was like, "I'm not sure he remembers, to be honest. I think he was pretty intoxicated."
And obviously the Kilcoo Mafia, I was tweeting about this yesterday, they had a banner up on Hill 16 as well. And they're fairly notorious by all accounts, the Kilcoo boys. So, I thought that was funny. Pete McGrath made a speech at the homecoming, and there's some footage of this on YouTube. People should have a look at it. Like, even just seeing the bus actually had to physically cross the border. You know, when you say, like, when teams win it, you say, "Oh, well, they headed back over the border." Actually seeing them have to go past one of a physical checkpoint border, I thought was just mad stuff. When you think of Pete McGrath said that we are the team that beat the team that couldn't be beaten.
Yes. It was sort of hair-raising stuff, wasn't it? Like, with me to play 10 games that year, that's like Mayo stuff this year.
Yeah.
Back then, I actually didn't realise that was the same year of the four Dublin games.
Yeah. Well, that's how Meath played. The All-Ireland final was Meath's 10th game. So they played four games against Dublin. They drew with Wicklow. They played two against Wicklow. They played Offaly. They beat Laois in the Leinster final that year. And they beat Roscommon. So, it's as many as Tyrone going through the back door, the famous one in 2008. Meade played that year, which is incredible. And then a whole lot of comebacks. You know, they were looking like the team that couldn't be beaten, because this is on the back of them winning All-Irelands in 87, 88, and then losing to, this was a serious, serious Meade team.
Yeah, and sometimes, as your father would say, your name is written on the trophy, and, it didn't look like, if they're coming back from so many games, if they have 10 games in the whole series, sometimes you might start thinking, this team are going to win it, especially when they come from 11 points down to make it a 2-point game late on. And the whole way through, the commentator's talking about, "Meath will come back, Meath, we're going to have a big comeback, they are the comeback king."
Yeah, it was incredible. So Paddy O'Rourke, the Down captain, said that when he was younger, he always thought he'd win in All-Ireland, but he'd given up hope. He was saying in an interview afterwards, because Down won a minor All-Ireland in 77 and an Ulster under-21 in 79. So he was, Paddy O'Rourke, Liam Austin, who came on as a sub, was very good. Ambrose Rogers, who came on very late, they had been around since 77. And like, I mean, then Down won another minor in 1987 and James McCartan and Conor Deegan came off that, you know. So Down were looking like they had potentially, you know, a really good team that year, but they struggled to get over Armagh in the first round, you know, like, I mean, so they weren't probably thinking All-Irelands that year at all.
No, I think Greg Blaney, he won that under 21 All-Ireland as well in 79, and he got an All-Star in the early 80s. I saw a great interview with James McCartan because he was one of their, he was the first All-Star in like 7 years. He got one in 1990, and he said that he bought a pile of journalists drinks on the International Rules Tour in Australia, and that's how he got the All-Star in 1990. But like, yeah, it was sort of, it was barren then for Down as it was for most of Ulster. Like, and like, it is funny now when you see some of those names and those iconic names, like Paddy O'Rourke and Liam Austin, to think that they might not have finished their careers with an All-Ireland is a bit scary.
Yeah, not that many came off that minor team in 87, actually, only McCartan, Conor Deegan. Conor Deegan was brilliant at fullback, and James McCartan, sure, he was absolutely unbelievable. Come here, Meade were down a lot of players. Like, I mean, when you look at it, no, I don't think they're making it, you're using it as an excuse, because Robbie O'Malley, who was the best cornerback of that era, he was gone from a broken leg. I think that happened in the Leinster final. Colm O'Rourke didn't start. Mick Lyons went off in the game. You know, like, I mean, and then they played 4 games in 5 weeks against Dublin. Like, I'm not sure, you know, physically they might have been fine, but the injuries took its toll on them. Now, look, whether that's got, would have made any difference in the final against the Down team that were on fire after halftime, no one will ever know.
Yeah, but I do think the Robbie O'Malley one was the big one, because McCartan was just running riot. They tried 2 different men on him, and like, you're just a tight, sticky cornerback, one of the best in the country, as you say, would have made a big difference there. I think Ferguson did all right on Linden, but yeah, just having that presence back there to keep an eye on McCartan would have really helped, keeping Lions for the full game. Although Lions came off when they were starting to get on top anyway, so I don't know how much of an impact that had. And he had a good game up to that point. It wasn't like he was a weak link or anything.
Yeah.
Would you start a Colm O'Rourke? Like, I know he was injured and they probably couldn't have played the whole game, but like, Jesus, like, he looked injured when he was playing, but he was just having such a big impact up there. He was catching ball and laying it off.
Well, if that was Colm O'Rourke not at 100%, I would hate to see him at 100%, because he was phenomenal when he came on. I thought when he started getting into it, he just, we'll save that for the analysis part.
Yeah.
Definitely, it's a huge talking point about, you know, whether he should have started, because obviously the effect his game had on Bernard Flynn was massive as well. But you were mentioning Ferguson did well on Mickey Linden. He got a lot of help from Kevin Foley, who nearly took the head off Mickey Linden in the first half. The referee looking straight at it, and he got no punishment for this whatsoever.
I don't know how many of these early 90 games we talk about now, and and the ref is like, if he does give any punishment, it's talking to boys and then telling them to go away, and it's crazy. Like, you know, I think John Kelly might have also done something pretty nasty in the first half, and again, just a talking to him, and he runs back thinking he can still do whatever he wants because he hasn't even been put in a yellow card. But that one on Linden was a skull crusher. You know, it's crazy that there wasn't even a tick.
No, it was an elbow straight to his face, which is unbelievable. But we'll leave it there, because James McCartan is joining us on the line now. James, we're talking about the elbow Mickey Linden got in the first half. It was a much harder game back then.
Yeah, looking back on that game, certainly was a very physical game. Mickey got a elbow from Kevin, intentional or unintentional, you can debate that, but it certainly connected, and Mickey lost a couple of his front teeth, so I don't believe the ones he has at the minute are his own.
Jesus. Like, I mean, that was right in front of the referee. Well, I'll give you my opinion on it. It was intentional. Like, I mean, it was an elbow straight to the face.
Well, look, I had the pleasure of marking Kevin in the National League final the previous year, and I marked him in part of that final as well. He was a hard man now, and I don't want to look, he was a good footballer, and obviously he scored that fantastic goal against the Dubs to get them through, but look, he certainly connected with Mickey there. But look, he wasn't alone. A lot of them, these boys were really able to look after themselves, and look, we knew we had to stand up to them. Like, I know I got a couple of heavy knocks too from McLean's and a few others, so look, these were the established team, and they were going into that final, and we knew they were a big physical side, but they also have commented since on a few reunions that we've had that they didn't realise, or they remarked on the side size of the down players, you know, when I probably was the smallest of them, but I was still 12 and a half stone. So look, we had 11 boys over 6 foot back in 1991, and it's just a pity down we couldn't produce a few more people that size and down at the minute, because we're full of good footballers, we're full of good wee footballers and down, you know.
Yeah, because I tell you, y'all look big, huge, strong men, and you all got massages before the game because you all had oil sparkling off your legs as well. That's another thing I know.
No, you're thinking of Liam Austin. Liam Austin always came out glistening and looking fab. I had the pleasure of having a summer in Boston, Liam, and we'd be painting houses, and when the sun moved around to the other side of the house, he moved the ladder around and just left the wall. He didn't finish the wall. If we can get that bit tomorrow, you'd say.
That's a classic. Well, he definitely is one to spring to mind. He was a specimen altogether when he came on, and he played well.
Yeah, like Austin had made his debut, I think, for Down in 1976. So that was 15 or 16 years earlier. So it was a swan song that year, and he'd missed a lot of the year through a groin injury. Now, this is the most humorous groin injury you'll ever hear about, because it all ran into a part of his body, and it made it swell. And Austin didn't need it to swear. He was well endowed to begin with, but look, he was a monster of a man in many ways.
Jesus, yeah. Well, it sounds like that, definitely. Come here, you were interviewed in the dressing room after the match, and you had a fat lip. You obviously mentioned Mick Lyons caught you early. He kind of came through a lad to get his hands on you. It was like you were marked out for him.
Well, look, as I say, Mick, you didn't go into his territory without knowing that you weren't going to get a slap, and certainly, any time I went in, that he hit you a slap. But look, he got a heavy knock himself, I think, from Peter Whittle, one part of the game, and I think he had to come off. So look, the injuries didn't go Mee's way that day either. I think they lost a couple of key men. So, but look, if you didn't stand up to them, you had no chance. And we had the benefit of playing in the National League final against them the previous year, and they beat us in the end. But we felt we competed well, and we weren't intimidated by them by that. So we didn't have any history of heavy defeats to them. So we didn't have that baggage. So we went into that game fairly confident, especially with the National League playing them previous year.
Right, okay. And in the interview in the dressing room, you said you hadn't been playing well throughout the year. You'd never have known it in the final because you were on fire. It wasn't just the 3 points you got. You were taken down for frees. You set up scores.
Yeah, well, look, I didn't think I had a particularly good year. I probably had a good year in 1990, and it was the second year syndrome, and I was struggling. You know, played in bits and pieces and patches, and Mickey was the man, certainly, and Peter Whittle and Mickey in the semi-final against Kerry, and I just said to myself, how am I going to try and improve here between now and the final? And Mickey and Paul Higgins were the two fastest men on the team, so any time we were doing any sprint sessions, I said, right, I'm going to be beside Mickey Lynn or Paul Higgins and try and push myself on and push and push, and Mickey set a very high bar, and I was trying to catch him. So look, I had my day in the sun in the final, but look, throughout the year, Mickey and others were probably the key men.
Yeah, it was a scrappy enough first half, James, wasn't it? Like, I mean, your score came off like a knockdown. That you're a good man to read the breaks off those longer balls.
Yeah, look down, we always like to kick the ball in if we can, and ball in early to the advantage of the forward. Yes, the first half, I think it was 8-4, very scrappy, but the period after half time was probably the 10-15 minute period. I'm not sure what we scored, but it was dream football, to be honest. Like, we scored 1-5, 1-6 or something like that, and Meath might have nicked a point somewhere along the line. So, you know, it was just a dream period of football. And then after that, Meath had their ascendancy. Look, we had chances. Mickey blazed one wide, and there was another chance that Mickey crossed over to Peter Whittle. So we were spurning chances, but they were, Bernard Flynn was very accurate the last 15-20 minutes of that game. He had a brilliant chance for our goal, and Neil Collins pulled us out of a hole. That's two All-Irelands in a row that I can tell you that only for Neil Collins we would have been defeated. He saved against Charlie Revan in the penalty in 94, and that save against Bernard Flynn in 91. All the momentum was with Meath at the time, and I was fairly confident that if Neil hadn't saved that, we'd have lost that one.
Right, okay, because Colm O'Rourke came on, he went 6 points up, and O'Rourke came on then. And then you scored the goal to go 9. Then you went 10, and he started getting into the game. Then he didn't look like he was sick, did he?
No. Look, the irony of it is that Mee's man of the match that day was Jerry McEntee, middle of the field. He had a very good game, and he actually wouldn't have started if Colm had started. So that was Colm obviously made a huge difference when he came on. But if he had started the game, Jerry wouldn't have started the game. So it was it's just hard to know. If they started them both, it would have been the best scenario for them. But that wasn't the way it was set up. Colm got into the game and certainly was a handful. And as I say, Bernard was very accurate the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, like, I mean, you're 11 points up at one stage. Surely, like, Meade start chipping away at a point or two. You're not thinking they're coming back at that stage, are you?
Well, look, they've done it all year. They've done it to the Dubs. Yeah. They've done it to everybody that played all year that has come from behind on many, many occasions. So certainly, there was one thing that said to me, one of the Meade players after the 1990 final. He said, did you know how long was left? And then the National League final in 1990, did you know, were you on top of the time? And I said, no. He said, well, do you not realise there's a clock in Croke Park? So I started, the next year I realised there was a clock in Croke Park, and I was waiting for 5 to 5, and it wasn't for Cracker Jack. That was going to be the end of the game. So I was watching the clock slowly, and you could see, but we did nick a couple of scores. Gary Mason, and I think maybe Greg Minnie did, or Eamon Burns
yeah, got a great one, yeah.
Yeah, Eamon got one of those brilliant ones, and that just put us from 2 points ahead, and they were very valuable two points at the end, because there was 2 points in it, you know.
Yeah, no, there definitely was. So, like, I mean, Pete McGrath said in the homecoming that we're the team that beat the team that couldn't be beaten, and we know about Meade, you know, that year. Were you watching those Dublin Meade games thinking, you know, we could come across these later on in the year, or?
Probably not. We were actually on our weekend away down in just outside Gormanstown College, and we were staying in the college, and so we went to see one of the games on the Sunday. But yeah, we were a long way off, thinking we were getting to Croke Park and playing against the Dubs. Two of us managed to sneak out to a little hostelry on the Saturday night, and we actually ran into the Meade goalkeeper. I couldn't believe it. He was out the night before they were playing in Croke Park.
He went out.
But it didn't. He was there. His name just escaped. Mickey McQuillan.
Yeah.
He was in goals. So we saw him in the pub the night before the match. Only we weren't playing the next day. He was.
Well, that's
sorry, Mickey.
That's a good one. Yeah, you're after hanging him out completely, but it's all right now. But that's a good one that you actually went to watch one of those games. Like, I mean, because you mentioned that league game, like, you must have thought here, you know, could be potentially play them.
Well, look, as I say, we were a million miles away. We struggled to get over Armagh in the first round of the championship, which famously up here was, I reckon, the pick of the teams wouldn't win another game. And then with a tough couple of games with Derry, they went to a replay, and Ross Garr pulled us out of a hole with a long range free. And then we had to pull a bit of a stroke because Greg Blaney got sent off in the first game, and the replay was to be a week later. But all of a sudden, we couldn't play it because there was a hurling game that had to be played, and that bought us an extra week. All of a sudden, Greg was part of the Down hurling squad very quickly. And the hurling game was played, so the Gaelic game was put back a week, so Greg was eligible for the replay. There's Nahum, somebody else out the dry there, didn't it?
Jeez, that's a good one. And did Greg tug out for the hurlers then?
Yeah, he tugged out, surely. I'm not sure if he played or not, but he was certainly part of the panel because he was needed.
very good result. But it was the year of the draws. You mentioned the Derry one there, and obviously the Dublin one. Leash drew it loud. The Connacht final was drawn. It was a crazy summer altogether.
Yeah. And look, I think it was that the year Leitrim won in Connacht? I can't.
No, that was 94.
There was loads of draws. Yeah, look, it was a good year for football, and it was a good final. Look, it was a good spectacle, and obviously it was the right result.
Yeah, you won a minor in 87. You won a minor back in 77, I think, as well. And another 21 in 79. Paddy O'Rourke was still from that era. It was just yourself and Conor Deegan came off the minors in 87, which I thought wasn't that many.
Probably that we were the only two that started, but there was quite a few had been on panels at various times. Cahill Murray would have been a sub in 91 and played in the National League final of 1990. There was a few others, Collie Byrne, some boys. Mark Quinn and a few others didn't make it through injury. Their careers were cut short. So, look, there was a few in and around, but yes, I suppose Connor and I were the two that were playing in 91.
Yeah. So what kind of an impact did Pete McGrath make? Was he a little bit before his time?
Oh, Pete was, look, he took the job when nobody wanted the job. He was probably well down the pecking order. But he knew the talent that was in the county, was in the schools and St. Comans, and seeing what the Abbey and the other schools had. And obviously he was the minor manager in 87, so he was well aware of what was coming through and what was around the county, and he had a lot of confidence in the players that were there. Now, back in those days, even though Down weren't winning Ulster championships, they were competing in Division One, and they were playing against the likes of the Kerrys and the Dublins and all, and the Meath, the big teams. So, as I said, they were probably regularly favourites for the Ulster Championship in the 1980s and didn't deliver, but right. They were favourites because they were always in Division One and they were always competing and maybe beating the Kerry the odd day. So that we were carrying that bit of baggage around us. We were always favourites in the 80s. And then come and people, we were seen as a soft touch and easily turned over in the Ulster Championship. So we were determined, and Pete certainly instilled that. He picked big men. He changed the team around. They had Ross Carr and Gary Mason, who had been defenders in their time, were up into the forward line to try and bolster the strength of the attack. So, yeah, look, and look, I'm not going to say they played the way a wing half forward would play now and put them sweeper systems, but certainly there was a defensive mindset there that we could defend from the front, you know?
Yeah, no, there definitely was. I noticed that about those two fellas. They were like not dropping way back or anything, but they were getting in, doubling up on lads and getting in and around, you know, situations and stuff. That was probably, you know, a new thing to have two of them doing that at that time.
Yeah, look, as I say, and they were prolific free takers. Like Gary and Ross were not 7-0-8 most games, you know, from frees and rarely missed. And look, they were impeccable in the final as well as regards free taking. Some of the scores that were fantastic. And whenever you've got two free takers, you can count on and knowing that if you're fouled in the scoring zone, that there's a fair chance of going over the bar. It breeds confidence throughout the team.
Yeah, Mason was a tough nut as well. He burst me over in Chicago once in 1998. There was no messing with him. I tried a bit of trash talking with him and it didn't last very long. I was down on the ground before I knew it.
Yeah, look, as I say, like that Down team, you know, was big, strong, physical and well able to look after themselves. Most of the players would have played midfield for their clubs, like Brendan McKernan, cornerback, and Paul Higgins, cornerback, were both midfield for their clubs. You know, a lot of boys, you know, were playing, like, even though I actually played a lot of football for my club, middle of the field, which might surprise you as well, but we were in the lower divisions, but like a lot of them were down the middle, man, and whenever they were going to the wings, you know, just meant strength, and they were quick as well. Like Paul Higgins was a flying machine. Everybody, you know, reverts to Mickey, and rightly so, but Higgins in a straight race, but I'd be able to just edge out Mickey, you know. So speed and strength are great assets.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. And obviously your win then kick-started a domination, and it had been a drought. There was a drought from 68 before you won it the second time, and then you won it four in a row. Was this like the shackles been lifted, or like a confidence thing in Ulster, or what do you think that was?
Well, what you would have had whenever Down would have won the All-Ireland in 91, and Jordanstown and Queens were relatively strong too, winning Sigerson's in around that time. And you had the Derry players, the McGurks and the Downies, who were at university with DJ Kane and these guys, and saying, hang on, we're just as good as those Down boys. There's nothing special about them Down boys, you know, and we can take them, and Donegal as well. So all of a sudden, these Ulster teams have been, and who could see that Down won it, but we believe we can do it. If they can do it, we can do it, because we're in university with them, and we can see that their players are no better than what we have. We have just as good. And that's the sort of thing catapulted. As I say, at that time, Queens and Jordanstown were strong too, and we always were able to trace back. Whenever Queens and Jordanstown were strong, we found the Ulster teams weren't far away. It was the same with Armagh, one at 0-2. I think that 17 or 18 players on the panel had come through the two universities, you know, so that's an awful lot. So the university seemed to be had a link to how successful the counties were going to be.
Right. Okay, come here, another one here before I let you go. In the interview in the dressing room after match, you're wearing a Meath jersey. What the hell were you thinking, swapping your All-Ireland winning down jersey for a bloody Meath jersey?
Look, I'd never been in an All-Ireland final before. I was caught on the hop. Tommy Dowd asked me for my jersey. I swapped my jersey and I was underneath the Hogan stand and I couldn't actually get out. I put on his jersey. I couldn't get out up to get my medal or up to where the cup was. So I didn't see the cup being presented. I went down underneath the tunnel. And I had to walk back to the dressing rooms through the crowds underneath the tunnel. And the amount of people that told me hard luck when they saw me, because I thought it was... because I thought it was wearing the Meath jersey. I actually got reunited with that jersey 3 or 4 years ago at a dinner. The jersey ended up in County Down, and it was the Donnan family from Hilltown, and it was returned to me in a framed, so for the wall. So look, I was delighted to get that back over after 25 years.
So what to do? Did Tommy Dowd sell it or something?
I think he passed it on to somebody, and I actually heard that it was in the county a few years previous to that, because one of the Chuck Brannigan from Kilcoo told me that his girlfriend wore it in bed, and I says, well, you do realise she's thinking of me when he wasn't too enamoured with me.
Well, that's a great one that you only got it 3 years ago, because I was just thinking watching you in the Meath jersey. Now I know it would be hard to say no to Tommy Dowd and stuff like that, but like, you'd be kicking yourself after, like, it's your All-Ireland winning jersey.
Look, it was haunting me for years. It was haunting me for years that I'd given that away. And before the 2010 Ulster final, I told the Down lads, whatever you do not give your jersey away, and don't make the same mistake that I made. And that's how Chuck was on the panel then. And he knew that I was looking for it back, type of thing.
Well, that's a good story. Go on.
I had been tipped off that Chuck knew where it was. So I said that to see if he would get it back from me.
would you believe there was a banner? I was tweeting about this yesterday up on Hill 16. I never saw so much colour in all my life. It looked like every supporter on Hill 16 had a flag, but the Kilcoo Mafia had a big banner. So maybe it was the Kilcoo Mafia that had the jersey all along.
Yeah, I had the jersey. They got it for me. Yeah.
Oh, they got it back for you, right? Okay, right. So they know how to fix things like that, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you just get the Robin Banks or anything there to name.
James, thanks very much for taking the call. We'll talk again.
No problem. We'll get a beer sometime. Take a hand out.
Thanks, James. Good luck.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we've a game there about 3:30. if you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
So down 1-16, Meath 1-14. And the big talking point at the start of this game, Conan, was Colm Rourke was out. Gerry McEntee was into midfield. And PJ Gillick was going into corner forward, who was a regular midfielder, who was picked as a midfielder. Now, James McCartan makes a great point about the loss of Colm O'Rourke, in that Gerry McEntee was outstanding. And if Colm O'Rourke would have started, you would have lost Gerry McEntee, who caught a mountain of ball as well. Probably the big loss is that they tried to play PJ Gillick in a similar role to Colm O'Rourke, and PJ Gillick just wasn't able to do it.
Yeah, I think the first question is, how the hell is Gerry McEntee not playing in this team every week?
Yeah.
I don't call him a super sub. Yeah, but like, Jesus, like, how dominant was he? Like, I lost count of how many balls he fetched from both kickouts, and he was working his socks off. Like, there was a stage where I thought he was going too deep, but he was just turning the ball over when he was back there, like, you know, and doubling up. And like, I can't get over the fact that he wouldn't have been playing if it wasn't for O'Rourke. And I think if you had Gerry McEntee in the middle and Colm O'Rourke up top, then, like, yeah, he would have really, like, caused serious trouble. I know O'Rourke was injured, but Gillick, as you say, I don't think he was giving them anything up there.
I felt sorry for him, is right. And they were trying to go route one a bit to him. Like, it was almost like Dublin with Keith Barr and Vinnie Murphy. Whenever Meade would have a free, Martin O'Connell would put it down and launch it high, you know, hoping for something. Meade didn't kick at all in the first half. The only bit of good play they had was when Liam Hayes scored a brilliant point from play. It was after Bernard Flynn got one of the only decent balls he got in the whole half, and he played a nice ball to Liam Hayes for a point from play. Other than that, Meade didn't play at all. You could say Down didn't kick very well in the first half either, outside of James McCartan being the outstanding player that kept Down ticking over.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that, like, you know, Down had a bit more thought in their passes. Like, yeah, you mentioned that Flynn one to Hayes. Like, his foot came across the ball, like, you know, and sort of pinged it into Hayes. And, but apart from that, everything was going up. Like, it was terrible trajectory. Like, and you know, even like nowadays, if you have a big man inside, he doesn't want the ball like that. He wants it hanging up, like, you know, so a nice trajectory on it so he can go and fetch it. But these were all coming down on top of Gillick and on top of Stafford. And yeah, like, and down on the other side, I just think that they probably took a bit longer to get into the game, but their passing was just a bit nicer because they knew they had Linden and McCartan up there, so they were pinging it to the corners a bit more.
Probably, yeah. I think after halftime, they pinged it a lot better when Blaney got into the game a little bit more. But Ross Carr and Gary Mason, they were two wing-backs, and it was interesting to hear James saying that they were actually wing-backs converted wing-forward. Sorry, they were wing-forwards. They were wing-backs converted wing-forward, and they were doing a lot of work around the field, you know, and they're probably leaving four lads up. It's crazy. I knew I loved that down team, and you know I love four forwards left up and everybody else working hard.
Yeah, and then when you're two dropping half forward, you're two highest scorers as well, then you can definitely make an excuse for it. I mean, Ross Carr scored 9 points in both the Derry games. Like, obviously he's a master from free kicks, but
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like Down were like a perfectly modern team. Like, they could play in this era, no problem, and be one of the best teams, obviously. Like, the two buzzing corner forwards, two of the best games ever seen. Whitnall, the wrecking ball full forward. They've got a creative centre forward in Blaney, and then two wing forwards that are working their socks off. And I actually think throughout this game, they almost stumbled across the modern template to play against the blanket defence. When, like, you know, Meave were bringing people back. I don't think it was a blanket, but they had more people back and they're putting them under pressure. Whereas the Down halfbacks then sort of sat in their positions and they had outnumbered Meave on the other side of the pitch then. And they get that structure and happy enough to try and ping it inside because they had the forwards.
Yeah. So the Meave were forced into changes. Kevin Foley went back on McCartan because McCartan was running amok. And it's an aghast. That was Brendan Riley marking him. When Brendan O'Reilly was the player in 96 that scored the Willen point, he's back corner back in 1991. I'm not sure if you noticed that. Well, if you didn't, you should have. But PJ Gillick was moved out. Tommy Dowd was moved in. Jesus, John Kelly was, like you mentioned this at the start of the show. John, if Tommy Dowd went to ground, John Kelly was on him with his knees and his back. He was going to town on Tommy Dowd.
Yeah, I think there was one stage where your man Beggy just seemed to pissed off at John Kelly because, again, Dowd was down. He'd won a free, rightly so. And then just Kelly was lying on top of him. But it was like 5 seconds late coming over.
Yeah.
And Beggy just said, piss. I just grabbed him. And, like, I hadn't seen Beggy react to that the whole game. And then the ref started, came over and had a word of both of them then. But, yeah, he was just stuck to that man all day.
Yeah, he was. Like, he was crossing the line. Like, it was outrageous. But I suppose, like, if he, that's what you want from someone marking Tommy Dowd. Like, I mean, he man-marked him. That was his job. And, jeez, he was leaving something on Dowd. Fairness to Dowd, he didn't really react from any of it, even though he didn't have one of his better games. But Down took over completely after halftime. They really started to kick. And, like, I mean, Linden got a point. Horrific defending by both Ferguson and Kevin Foley. Imagine Mickey Linnick cutting back in on his left and both defenders going off thinking he's going on his right. Like, but that just shows the speed, I suppose, of Linden, that, you know, he will go along the end line if you give him an opportunity. So Linden got that score. That was actually Blaney, McCartan and Linden were all involved in that. Like, and Mickey Linden celebrated that. You know, it was a takeover. Then Meade were six down and O'Rourke comes on 8 minutes into the second half. You know, and then the Down goal came, you know, to put nine in it, which was McCartan to Blaney and Linden and across to Breen again. Like, it was those three, McCartan, Blaney and Linden, were the three you had to watch, even though Linden didn't have his a better game. But then again, if his teeth knocked out from Kevin Foley, like James McCartan was saying, like, I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah, I actually thought that goal, he was brilliant for it. I know he missed a couple of his own chances, but it was such intricate play. It was so tight in there. The pass from Blaney was a little bit like, oh, like, you know, putting it over the top to Linden. And then I was trying to think the difference between Mickey Linden and me in that situation. Like, you know, so I would have caught the ball, braced, and just fell into the tackle and held onto the ball for as long as I could. Whereas Linden catches it, keeps his wits about him. He steps away from the tackle and just pops it across. And it looks so simple, but it's not. Like, anybody else grabs that ball and they just brace themselves. And actually, a minute later, Beggy had something similar where he tried to catch it at the other end, but he was aware of the tackle coming and he ended up dropping it. But Linden just managed to pull back out from the tackle and throw it across. Simple right. as that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was. I think Nick Lyons was the one jumping over towards him as well as he passed it across. Then James McCartan got one off the left, a beautiful score, and Lyndon threw that back out to him. So, like, I mean, you say Lyndon didn't play well. That's only at the very, very high standards that, you know, he would have set. He's still setting up scores and got one himself, you know. It's just, I suppose, the 94 final, he would have played an awful lot better. So they're 10, 11 points down at this stage. And then Meade start to come back. O'Rourke gets a point. O'Rourke hit two lads, two right shots then as well when he came on. And David Beggy had a half goal chance. And then Flynn had a brilliant goal chance and hits it straight at Collins in the goals. And then O'Rourke goes for a goal when it's not really on and drives it a mile wide. So you'd say, like, they're starting to play at least, but they're wasting chances. Imagine to say Meade got it from 11 down to 2 and wasted a load of chances. Bernard Flynn had a couple of wides that he'd tap over.
Yeah. And I think, like, Bernard Flynn, I know the goal chances, he might not need to go for him so early, but Flynn, he definitely should have scored. Like, in the position he was in, he could have just gone top left or bottom right, and he went in between, like, and it was an easy save in the end for Collins. But yeah, if they had just kept chipping away, because Down sort of went into that mode then. I think between the 19th and 47 minutes, Down had outscored me 1-9 to 0-1. And then Mickey Lyndon missed the two goal chances. So Down were probably thinking, right, that's us done. Like, you know, we need to cling on to this now. So if Meave had just kept that taking over, you're right, the Colin O'Rourke one just wasn't on. Maybe that comes back to the fact that you brought him on from the bench and he's trying to have such a big impact when they're so far down. If he had started, yeah, would have given them a bit more leadership.
Well, I did think O'Rourke was trying to throw it around a lot. Like, I mean, whenever he got the ball, he was looking for Bernard Flynn. He set him up for a few different ones. But the Lyndon goal chance was after the Meade goal, actually. The Meade goal put 4 in it. There had been 7 in it. And then Brendan Riley won a free. And it should have been given against him because he threw up an elbow. And he just drove it down the field. Remember, he was really eager to take it. And Tommy Dowd won it. All on his own, and then played a lovely ball inside. Oh, he was fouled. Played a lovely ball to Hayes. And Hayes scored 1-1 in that final that, like, I mean, shouldn't be underlooked. They were phenomenally classy for a big midfielder. And, like, I mean, we'll get to the midfield battle in performance of the weekend, because I think it's probably better there, because if it's possible, all 4 midfielders played well. Like, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Go on. No, I was going to say, that's like a flashback to, like, the golden era of midfielders where you just let each other play. you're not hanging off each other, and there's no James Barry just running around after Brian Fenton. It's just two midfielders on two midfielders, and they're both playing their own game.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely is. So then Lyndon had that chance. And what was he thinking with this? He shot with his right foot. I mean, it was crazy stuff. It was a knockdown from Peter Whitnell. Who wasn't really in the game. The best thing Peter Whitnell did in the game was absolutely open John Harnan with a really dirty shoulder in the first half, could have knocked him out. But Whitnell knocked it down to him. Could you believe Lyndon? He could have stayed going. Why would he have not have shot on his left? It was a bizarre kind of sequence of decision-making from him.
And the weirder one, because just before that, he got a ball thrown across him and he should have gone on to his right where the net was empty, but he came back in on his left and got blocked down, you know.
Yeah, I
don't know. He went far too early, right? He went with his right. Maybe he was just trying to throw the keeper off guard, but you can go with your left and throw him off guard. And I had all that. Maybe it probably just had too much time. I don't know. But it could have done anything else except good off his right foot, high and wide, you know.
Yeah, the two of the biggest scores, obviously, for Down were Gary Mason got a huge score from playing Eamon Burns with his second, which was a lovely outside of the right point. That both of them gave them breathing space and stopped the Meade comeback. You know, you're going 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 4, now it's, you know, 6. You know, and then you have to come back down. I think the Eamon Burns one put 8 back in it after it being 7. Now they have to go back down to 7 again. And Mason put 6 in it with nine minutes to go. So, like, I mean, they were big scores. And, like, I mean, we do talk about Meade being wasteful. James McCartan, Greg Blaney and the Mickey Lyndon goal chance, they all missed chances that they should have got, even though, like, I'm sure nerves started playing into it. Now, like, I mean, James McCartan admitting that he discovered where the clock was in Croke Park and he was checking the clock out.
I don't
blame him.
I think the important thing was, especially for Mickey Linden's goal chances, was that both times Down got the next score, and actually from the first goal chance they got a score straight away. I think it was Blaney who put it over. You know, rather than those 4-point swings where they could have got a goal and conceded a point, they actually just went and registered the next score and sort of kept the pressure on and weren't probably left regretting it. That was really important.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, the big thing with Meath is, like, yeah, they had 9 games, but you don't finish a game like that, you know, if you're tired. Like, tiredness wasn't an excuse. Like, I mean, but there's no doubt they were flat. And I think O'Rourke, the impact O'Rourke had on their game plan, you know, was a big thing. I know Jerry McEntee playing well, but, like, how they can turn it around there when everything's going against them but still not be able to perform. Did he underestimate Down? You know, like, I mean, is there a chance that was the case, that Down would have beaten an ageing Kerry team in the semi-final with a couple of Whitnall goals? And me just thought that their name was written on it because they'd come through all these games. I would probably put it down to Colm O'Rourke being so central to how they played, and being such a talisman, and then try to get it in high to Gillick just wasn't working.
Yeah, and like, they probably played Gillick balls that they wouldn't have played Colm O'Rourke, you know, whereas when O'Rourke was there, it was just a bit more natural for them. They played their normal game. So there did just seem to be more urgency, though. I think you're right on the flat part. Like, when they were so far back, when O'Rourke came on, when Hayes got the goal, obviously, but they just had their tails up a bit more, like, and they were a bit more desperate, and obviously that fed into them, because you look at it and there was nothing that Down did wrong where you're like, oh, what, they missed a couple of chances, but they didn't retreat too much. They didn't do anything stupid. It was just Meath got their tails up and started chasing the game like their lives depended on it, and they weren't doing that from the start.
Well, that's it, and the reputation Meath had then as comeback kings, you know, like, I mean, there's no doubt in an All-Ireland final for the first time since 1968, Down started going a little bit. You can't dominate a game for the whole game anyways, you know, like, I mean, then when Meath start coming back, I suppose they were like, oh shit, that's why Mason that's why Eamon Burns and Gary Mason's scores were too so important, because obviously if they didn't score them, it's a draw. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, they just simply had to get a couple of scores on the board during that Meath kind of comeback, yeah, and to just take some wind out of their sails, even though it's not like it worked. Meath just ran out of time. 5 more minutes there, and that's probably a draw.
Yeah. Did you think the ref was a little harsh on Meath throughout?
I don't really remember thinking too much of him.
Yeah, I just thought he was very quick. He blew a couple. Like, you know, I don't think it mattered that much. But I think as soon as he saw a couple of bodies around, he just immediately blew the whistle. You know, when there wasn't always a foul in there. I don't know if his reputation sort of went before him or anything. But I just thought there was a couple of handy scores as well that Ross Carr got the chip over from just sort of wishy-washy tackles.
Yeah, maybe freeze. Maybe one or two soft freeze, all right, for Down. I'll give you that in the first half, which kept them ticking over. But like we said, Down were the better team in the first half. Right, we'll leave it there, Conan, and we'll come back with performance of the weekend.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Performance of the weekend. I'm going to start with midfielders, because you could arguably put all 4 of them into performance of the weekend. Jerry McEntee was just sensational. He was absolutely excellent. A brilliant, brilliant fetcher. Liam Hayes got 1-1. Wasn't in the game as much as Jerry McEntee from a fetcher point of view, but 1-1 in an All-Ireland final from your captain is not to be sniffed at. Eamon Burns got 2 really important scores, 2 punted scores. More 1980s type scores than 1990s. It had evolved a bit more from the punt in 1991, but he was sticking with it. And Barry Breen got the important goal. It got through a good bit of work, and Barry Breen was cleaned out by Jerry McEntee in the air, but then he got the goal that won the All-Ireland final for Down. Like, you know, so all 4 deserve a huge shout.
Yeah, I actually, Eamon Burns is funny, like his first score at the top of the laces. Before that, it was such a modern score that they were pressing up high to turn it over. You had your halfback and Paddy O'Rourke feeding Glenn. It was sort of tight hand pass, and Blaney played through Burns, and then he just decides to go top of the laces and punt this straight over. But yeah, I think from the four of them, Breen got the goal, but he was definitely, I think, the weaker of them, just because Jerry McEntee was so dominant. Yeah. Actually, when Liam Austin came on, and I think it helped down just over the line in the end.
He made a huge impact, Austin, in fairness to him. He did. He really, really did. He was very good. But that it's funny, you always remember Blaney for this brilliant man to get breaks in midfield and give beautiful ball out to Lyndon or whoever. But he was sharp with the hand pass too, like the Burns point, I think. I know it was a loopy one enough to Lyndon, but both Burns points, I think, could have been from Blaney hand pass. He was sharp enough with a hand pass.
Yeah, he was just a clever player, wasn't he?
Yeah, very clever.
Yeah, he just had time to do whatever he wanted and always picked the right decision.
So that was it. And I thought he had a quiet first half, but he was fouled for one of, I think it was Ross Carr's points. He set up a lovely pass to Lyndon, who set up McCartan, who was fouled, and he was fouled himself, or he gave the hand pass to Burns. Because I was watching him in the first half thinking, geez, I think Blaney might be getting bypassed in this. And then you're thinking, oh, well, still he's been directly involved in three of the 8 points they scored in the first half.
Yeah, they thought nothing of an old cynical foul back in 1991 either.
Yeah.
I think McLyons had the worst one. It was on Blaney. Actually, Blaney was out the wing and he got free. He sort of turned Lyons, who was falling on his arse, and he just grabbed him by the two legs and clipped him off the air. But just a neat, clever player.
Yeah, McLyons was a neat, clever fullback too, you'd have to say as well. Like, I mean, he did very well in Whitnall. And I think back that era obviously suited those type of big, strong fullbacks, because you know you were getting a good percentage of balls that came in high, even for a good footballing team like Down. You know, ones astray. There was very little McLyons didn't mop up when you know it didn't come in the forwards' advantage.
He's so good on his feet as well. Like I think Whitnall was actually a bit spooked by him. Obviously, he's so strong, Lyons. So like Whitnall, who's like you know a bulldozer, he didn't seem to want to go into it too much with Lyons. And there's one stage then where it was a soft free, but James McCartan just got stopped by him. And you're thinking, like, he can easily turn him now, but Lyons just takes up so much space that McCartan can't go anywhere. Like, he's actually pretty good on his feet. Like, he didn't get turned too easily.
Yeah, I must give Mick Lyons a call for the show at some stage because, like, I mean, when you have Tony Boyle telling you that when he was going to mark him, when he was going to go mark Mick Lyons back in that era, that he was getting phone calls during the week saying don't look him in the eye, don't everybody ringing that if you look him in the eye you get spooked, don't shake his hand because he'll do something to you, he'll give you a dig, like I mean all these kind of things that people, like he just had a reputation that it was the fear thing, it was people, players were afraid of him.
Yeah, he just, as I say, he took up so much, and like he doubled up very well, so he had no problem leaving his man and coming out and like just hitting somebody else a drive with the shoulder. And you could sense that, like you were saying about Mickey Lyndon not having a good game. I think Ferguson did really well, but there was just that sort of sense of urgency in the corner forward and the full forward where it was just like, we need to get this ball off or somebody's going to hit us hard.
Yeah, no, look, it was Meade at the end of the day. They took no prisoners. And Bernard Flynn definitely deserves a shout. He got 6 in total, 5 in the second half, I'm pretty sure. Or else it's 5 in total, 4 in the second half. But like, I mean, Bernard Flynn was class. Like, there's no doubt he was the danger forward back in those days. But he needed a foil. He needed a good ball, you know, and he just wasn't getting any good ball. And, like, that's what O'Rourke just changed the game for him, in that he had someone that could win ball and he could lay it off to him. And the great thing about O'Rourke, when O'Rourke got a free, he's taking the free quick. He's looking for Flynn all the time. Like, I mean,
yeah,
if he gets a ball from play, O'Rourke's not thinking twice, just a quick little punt pass off the middle of his boot that bounces in front of Flynn, and Flynn's coming around the corner on his left and it's over the bar. Bernard Flynn was a different player.
Yeah, and he had the best assist as well. You mentioned that one to Liam Hayes, apart from Dowd, maybe obviously a nice pass, but he got the switch of play out in the wing and just pinged that pass inside. Yeah, and it is scary that they had Flynn on for so long and maybe weren't using him enough until Colin Moore came on, and like, it was 6 points he got overall, so 5 in the second half. Most of them probably with O'Rourke on the pitch. So, like, that's an underused gem that you had in your full forward line.
like, Bernard Flynn should have scored 1-6 in the second half. Like, because he did miss a very bad one from play, and his the finish off his left was poor now, you'd have to say, for his from his standards. He was on top of the goalkeeper. You put that anywhere and that's a goal. You know, I know Collins had to stop it, but it was into his stomach, kind of. Like, that's unbelievable. What, it could have been 1-6 and 1-7 in total in an All-Ireland final. And, well, you don't know what would have happened, I suppose, if that goal had come in, had gone in. But there'd be a good chance, you know, Meath could have won it.
Yeah, and that would have been one of the all-time great second-half performances.
Yeah, the all-time great. Like, it was anyways. But the worst thing is, and I know this myself, whenever you play well, when you lose, that's just forgotten about within a couple of days. Like, yeah. I mean, it's devastating. Yeah. Whereas, like, you play well and you win and it's remembered. Like, I mean, it's crazy. So what is going on with Colm O'Rourke? And we'll talk about this here. How did Colm O'Rourke not start that game? I want to know. So there, from reading about it, he had a touch of pneumonia or a bad flu or something. Christ almighty, I am starting Colm O'Rourke and I'm taking him off potentially. I'm not waiting for 8 minutes in the second half to start him. He looked in great. He looked in great form. He was all over the place, like, I mean, all over the field, winning ball, hitting lads, setting up scores. Like, I don't, or else do what they did with Peter Canavan and start him, take him off, and bring him back on again. Like, I mean, but Colm O'Rourke in that shape, and they would have known what he kind of shape he was in. I don't want to criticise Sean Boylan too much, like, after everything he did in the game. And maybe Colm O'Rourke said to him, look, I don't feel right. Who knows? But he didn't. He played like he should have started, is the point I'm making.
Yeah, and like you said, like, the Peter Canavan thing is a good point, because, you know, you want him on for as long as he possibly can be on, you know, and that way they only had him on from, what, the 43rd minute. And it's just like, if you could have gotten an extra 8 minutes, an extra 15 minutes out of him, you're missing 15 minutes of Colm O'Rourke. And, like, yeah, he was just imposing himself on the match. And it wasn't just like a high ball in that he was catching above his head, which he was doing, or laying off people, or like taking men on. He was winning it in the corner as well. He was winning every type of ball, and he was doing so many different things. But it's just like, this definitely, I think they should have started him. Even I saw the big knee strap on him and stuff as well. Like, even if he was injured, like, he should have started. And sure,
he wore that the whole time. That was like, he's famous for the knee strap, and he was just sick. It was just bad luck. But I don't know. Like, I mean, you know, geez, for me anyways, he had to start. John Kelly deserves a mention here, Conan. Like, right, overstepping the line a little bit. But God, if you want somebody to tie up a half forward, I might be giving John Kelly a ring. But then again, in the modern game, he's getting the line for two bad knees in your back, and that's it.
Yeah, he's a John Small of the modern game.
He's like a cat diving on Tommy Dowd the minute Dowd hit the ground. Just don't go to ground if John Kelly's marking you. That's it. Stay on your feet at all times.
And like, Tommy Dowd isn't bloody soft either. Like, you know, he's a big, hardy centre forward. So I was actually surprised. For like, you know, the first 10 minutes, I think Dowd was like looking very sharp and dangerous. And I was wondering why he was Paddy O'Rourke, maybe not in the centre, keeping an eye on him. But John Kelly was the dog to send in just to keep an eye on him. And I think he ended up trying to move Tommy Dowd around him to get him more involved in the game.
Yeah, no, definitely. But the performance of the weekend, there is no doubt in this game who the man of the match was. And that's James McCartan. Whether it was setting up scores, whether it was scoring three from play, whether it was getting fouled for scored frees in the first half. You know, he must have been responsible for 7 or 8 points in the game. He was outstanding. And like I was saying to him in the interview there about, he was interviewed in the dressing room afterwards, and he didn't think he had been playing brilliantly that year. So talk about saving your very best for the final day. Like, an outstanding player. And got one off his left. I rage, and I forgot to ask him about this, and I had it down on the notes. Did you hear Jack O'Shea in the commentary talking about it when McCartan scored off the left? He scored a lovely one off the left. And Jack O'Shea said, I've seen it all, Ger, when I've seen James McCartan take a pint off his left foot.
Yeah, I did hear that. And like, I suppose when you're as good and as sharp as James McCartan, you don't always have to go onto your left, because you'll make space for it on your right. I think he does deserve it. My heart's broken for Gerry McEntee, because I've honestly not seen as many great All-Ireland final performances as that. And you say, it didn't win, so like, nobody really going to talk about it. Like, that should be a performance for the ages that we talk about forever.
Yeah.
But like, just as a game that they lost, and that's it.
And in fairness, McEntee wasn't the tallest player. Like, he didn't look, he wasn't, like, Hayes was a big, imposing, big, you know, monster of a midfielder. and Eamon Burns was a big long rake. Jerry McAtee was a bit of a slip of a fella.
That's Fergal Doherty syndrome. That's what it is.
But like, the reason I'm saying slip of a fella, like, you see Jerry McAtee's legs, and they're skinny legs. Do you know?
He's right. Can I take back the Fergal Doherty thing?
Yeah, because I was thinking that wasn't a good comparison. He just wasn't one. He was no Anthony Toole, you know, for example. I reckon for that era, he would have been on the smaller, less physically imposing midfielders at the time.
Yeah, he just had timing, didn't he? Yeah. Timing, a big, massive heart, like, you know, and he just, like, sometimes he was catching the ball in his chest by jumping over boys' heads, like, you know, he was just coming from that far back sometimes. Yeah, but I don't want to take away from James McCartan, though. He deserves performance of the weekend, I suppose. But
no, like, he definitely is. Really, I'm continuing calling it performance of the weekend, even though it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, but I think like Kevin McCartan summed up that sort of down cockiness as well. Like, you know, he just looks like he knows he's a good player and he wants the ball, and he looks like he knows when he's in good form. When he scored that first point, it was sort of like, ah, here we go. You could see it in his face, like, you know, that he was going to enjoy his day, and like, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he kind of had a way of playing and walking around like he was just kind of cool on the field, you know, that kind of way. It's just like, whatever, you know, like, I mean, he'd get a good point, and it was the way he carried himself.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and like, every time I see like those retro jerseys, I remember at the time, like, they were like, you couldn't get them, they were like hand teeth, those retro or those replica down jerseys. Like, every time I see one now, it always just I think of all these down men who, like, are walking around carrying themselves like James McCartan. I think he's inspired a whole generation of people to try and be as cool as he was.
Right, well, James McCartan, congratulations, performance of the weekend. That's all we've time for. Like I was saying on the hurling show, I think we might do a combined show on Thursday, Colin, and maybe get up to date on where everything is. I'm not sure if there even is a show to be done with that. We'll have to get a couple of interviews to make up the show as well, but we'll take a break from these nostalgia ones on Thursday, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.